shortstop moving to cover the steal. Duggan fell to the ground as the ball hissed its way through the hot and heavy July air, missing his right ear by inches. The throw was just about textbook perfect, 6 inches off the ground and about 2 feet in front of second base. Blake slid into the tag. "You're out," yelled the umpire, pumping his right arm along his side, his hand clenched in a fist. The fans jumped to their feet and roared themselves hoarse with enthusiasm. Frank, who was seated directly behind the Egyptian's bench next to John Moore, stood with his mouth open but did not make a sound. He had never seen an arm like that on a kid that young. "He never got up," the scout shouted as he turned toward John. Frank had to look down to see the father, who was still seated on the bleacher. "Gene is a complete ball player. He can do it all," Frank thought to himself. John, meanwhile, stood slowly and clapped with the rest of the crowd, amazed at their admiration for his son. The first inning ended quickly when Bobby grounded out to third and the last batter popped up to left field. The game was tight for several innings, but the Egyptians came to play, and play they did. Gene had one of his best days at and behind the plate. No one else tried to steal a base for the balance of the game. Gene just wouldn't allow it. Although he struck out once, he smacked a hard single into left and sailed a long sacrifice fly to score a run. In the bottom of the ninth, with one out, he took his turn at bat for a fourth time that Sunday afternoon. The count was 2-2, and the pitch was a high fastball. Gene swung with everything he had and connected, driving the ball deep into center field. 500 people stood as one and watched the ball sail over the Huey Lumber sign and disappear into the grove of locust trees. The noise was deafening. Gene raised his arms in triumph as he trotted toward second base. His home run sealed the win 5-4. The win was important, but the only thing that truly mattered to Gene was that his pop saw him play baseball for the first time. Through it all, John Moore sat next to Frank, watching the scout with one eye and the crowd with the other. Now he understood why everyone in town was talking about his son. He wasn't just another ball player. He was special. John didn't remember the walk home that afternoon, but he remembered to the day he died the pride he felt knowing his son had a gift few others were blessed with. Chapter 5, Monday, August 6, 1941. Gene walked outside and stood on the porch. 2 weeks had passed since Frank Boudreau left Cesar, and no one had heard a word. He was beginning to think the scout had second thoughts about signing a 15-year-old kid. "Maybe I'm not as good as everyone thinks I am," thought Gene. "Maybe Frank knows that now." Who was he kidding? The Dodgers? The Brooklyn Dodgers were seriously interested in having him play in their organization? He sighed with disappointment and shook his head as he walked toward the barn. How could he have been so naive? How would he explain this to his friends? It was noon in Cesar, and as usual, it was hot. Ward, Gene's older brother, was in the barn unloading coal from Pop's wagon with a shovel. "What's in your hand?" Ward asked when Gene entered the barn, stopping to lean on his shovel. He had been unloading the coal for nearly 30 minutes, and he needed a break. "A bucket," answered Gene. Ward twisted his face in disgust. "Not that hand," he said, nodding toward the bucket. "The other hand." "Baseball cards," Gene answered with enthusiasm. He dropped the bucket and spread the cards out on top of the barrel. "Look! Enos Slaughter, Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Dizzy Dean. And look at this one, the rookie, Pee Wee Reese." "Why do they call him Pee Wee?" asked Ward. "I don't know," Gene said with a shrug. "He's small, I guess, but he sure plays big. And that's what I love about baseball. When you step out onto that field, the size of the man is determined by his heart, not his height." Ward furrowed his brow and shook his head. He had never gotten into baseball like his brother. "Why are you so crazy about that baseball? You're 15, you're almost a man, Gene. I don't understand why you're so taken by that stupid game." "Ward, baseball is America's game," Gene shot back defensively. "All true Americans love baseball. It's a game that only belongs to us. No one else in the world plays it. So what? Maybe there's a reason no one else plays it. Ever think about that?" Ward replied with equal vigor, edging closer and tensing up as he glared at his little brother. Gene sighed. The last thing he wanted was a fight. "Baseball is more than a game, Ward. At least it is to me. I don't know how to explain it. You either get it or you don't. I think it brings out the best in us." He paused and watched Ward relax a bit. "Do you know what I mean?" "Nope." Gene slipped the baseball cards into his back pocket, lifted off the Egyptian's baseball cap he wore each day, and ran his fingers through his thick mane of hair. "You want to know something about a man? Just play ball with him. You'll learn everything you need to know about him, who he is, what he believes. It's all revealed as the game unfolds. You just have to be open and watch what he does. Feel what he does. You'll see if he reacts or responds to the challenges." When he saw the perplexed look on Ward's face, Gene continued in an effort to explain it to him. There's a difference, you know. If he reacts, you have him beat. If he responds, you have a formidable opponent. Besides, baseball defines us as a country. It's a game that is purely American. That's why I said all Americans love baseball, Ward. I'm no different. There was no doubting Ward and Gene were brothers. The coal black hair and dark eyes were a dead giveaway, but that is where the similarities ended. Almost 4 years older than Gene, Ward rarely complimented his little brother and paid even less attention to him. Although he did not verbalize it, Ward knew Gene was different somehow. When Gene was in the barn or around the house, he was just Ward's kid brother, but when Gene picked up a bat or put a catcher's mitt on his hand, he had no equal in Cesar. And since the Brooklyn Dodgers scout had come to town, the men in town had talked about nothing else except Gene and the major leagues. Now everyone referred to Ward as Gene's older brother, and Ward didn't like it one bit. The fact that Gene was also a couple inches taller than Ward didn't help matters. Ward was the oldest Moor boy, and he took life far more seriously than any of his siblings. Pop's expectations for him were high, and at times he seemed to stumble under the weight. His sense of responsibility and the additional pressures of being the oldest during the worst depression the country had ever witnessed made him feel that Gene was wasting his time and getting off easy when he should have been working to put more food on the table. Ward listened to his brother try to explain the game he so loved, but when Gene stopped talking, he just shook his head and sighed. When are you going to grow up, Gene? You're not going to be a big league baseball player. Where is this Brooklyn big shot? He drives up in his fancy car and fills your head with a bunch of lies, gets your hopes up, and then drives out of our world and back into his own. Rich and famous people are all alike, Gene. They don't care about you and I one whit. The word stung Gene deeply because he was already half convinced Ward was right. He leaned back against the barrel, folded his arms across his chest, and lowered his eyes so his brother would not see the tears aching to run down his cheeks. You know what you're gonna be? Continued Ward. A coal miner or a pig farmer. That's what we do here in Franklin County. That's what all Cesar men do. We mine or we farm. What else can we do? You might as well just get used to the idea. Ward leaned his shovel against the wagon and wiped the coal dust on his pants. You know, it's not just baseball that comes out of that radio. If you listen to the news reports or read a newspaper, you might find out that you and I, heck, probably most of the boys in Cesar here are going to be soldiers soon. The Germans are all over Europe, Gene. Do you think they're going to stop there? When our country calls, we have to answer. Gene lifted his eyes and looked at his brother. Soldiers? He shook his head. I'm not going to be a soldier. I couldn't shoot anybody. In control of his emotions once again, Gene straightened himself up and shifted the cap on his head. I am going to play baseball, and I am going to get better than I am today, and someday I'm going to play in the major leagues. You, big brother, will be listening to me play on the radio. Gene picked up a corn cob and pretended it was a microphone. He cleared his throat and deepened his voice. Batting cleanup and catching for the St. Louis Cardinals, Gene Moore! Ward shook his head but could not hold back a small chuckle. Without thinking, he reached over and tried to pluck the corn cob out of Gene's hand, but his brother's reflexes were far too quick, and he pulled it back out of reach. Oh yeah, laughed Ward? Try this. He jumped to one side, picked up another cob, and threw it at his sibling. Gene's right hand shot up and caught it. Ward stared open-mouthed for a few seconds before both brothers erupted in laughter. Can't get anything past me, Ward, chuckled Gene. I don't let balls get past me as a matter of principle. If it's thrown to me, I'll catch it. If I have a bat in my hand, I'll hit it. Gene! Gene, I need that coal! Gene gritted his teeth. Oh no, I forgot about Mom. He picked out a shovel and began filling a bucket with the coal his mother needed for the cook stove. Everything in this world has a purpose, Ward, continued Gene as he dumped another shovelful of the black rocks into the bucket. A ball is meant to be hit or caught. It demands it of us. I was made to do both. That's my purpose. It's what I was built to do. Ward could not believe what he was hearing. The ball demands it. You've lost it, little brother. Every kid likes baseball. But then they grow up. But not you. Now you're talking to the ball. The ball makes demands. You think about that ball as though it has a life. You hear the ball giving you orders? Catch me, Gene. Hit me, Gene. If you're not careful, they're going to reserve a room for you at the Anna Jonesboro Hospital. Think what you want, Ward, Gene said with a wide grin. Someone has to feed the pigs and mine the coal while I'm playing baseball over the country and you're trying to catch me on the radio. Maybe you'll be on the radio, maybe you won't, Ward conceded somewhat. But one thing's for sure, Pop will be out soon, and if we don't get this coal unloaded and help him feed these pigs, we ain't going to live long enough to know for sure whether you can make it or not. Gene? Coming, Mom. Gene turned to face Ward. Okay, but give me your best shot, he said as he stepped back a few yards and dropped into his catcher squat. Ward looked at Gene and slowly smiled. Okay, little brother, but I'm warning you, it's gonna hurt. Ward picked up another corn cob, but this time he broke it in half to make it easier to throw and harder to catch. He did his best to stare Gene down, began a slow and awkward wind-up, and was ready to let the cob fly when John Moore walked into the barn. What's going on in here? He demanded. Nothing, Pop, Ward laughed. Gene was just telling me how he has conversations with a baseball. Pop looked from one son to another as if both had lost their minds. Well, let's go have a conversation with these pigs. They told me on the way into the barn they were hungry. Pop, Ward, and Gene were out slopping the pigs when a familiar blue Buick turned once again onto Mulberry Street. John saw it first. Tell me, Gene, did you really believe that Scout would come back? Pop asked. Both sons shot a glance at their father. It was the first time he had mentioned the matter since Frank Boudreau left town. No, I guess not, Gene answered slowly, doing his best to hide his disappointment. John nudged Ward and tilted his head toward the street, lifting his finger to his lips. Ward turned and spotted the Buick. His face failed to betray any emotion at the sight of the returned scout. Looks like someone's here to see you, John calmly announced. See who, Ward? Gene asked without looking up. No, not Ward, you. John motioned to the street where Frank Boudreau was climbing out of his car. Gene felt Ward give him a light punch on the shoulder, but he felt as if someone had socked him in the chest. For a moment, he found it difficult to catch his breath. It's hard to believe that something that produces a smell so bad can taste so good, Frank called out as he walked toward the pig pen. Smells like a living to me, John answered. This time he greeted the scout's arrival with a smile instead of cold silence. He eased open the gate to step out and grab a bucket of slop. Not all of us can get paid to play a game. Well, I'm glad to say that at least one person here can. A big smile spread across Frank's face as he took a step through the open gate and came to a halt on a fresh pile of pig manure. Oh, no. Frank spat as he jumped backward out of the pen. He quickly saw the humor in the situation and broke into a laugh. John joined in. Gene was so excited to see the scout, he just stood there, mouth open and unable to say a word. Frank wiped the bottom of his leather shoe on a fence board. Gene, I have good news for you. The Dodgers agree with me and want you as part of their organization, but you'll have to step out of the pen if you want to hear more. I just can't take any future major leaguer seriously when you're standing knee-deep in pig shit. Gene looked at his dad, unable to believe his ears or say a word. John merely nodded his approval. Come on, let's go up to the house and talk there with your mom and dad. John, do you have a few minutes? Frank waited a moment. But neither Gene or John moved a muscle or said a word. Gene was stunned, and his young age and innocence was clearly on display for both men to see. John was torn between helping his son realize his dream and losing him from the farm. Sure. Let's go have some lemonade, John finally said as he put down the galvanized steel bucket he was carrying and slapped Gene on the back. Ward, can you finish up here? Sure, Pop, no problem. As Gene, Pop, and Frank walked away, Ward shook his head, picked up the bucket, and continued feeding the hogs. He was secretly proud of his brother, but he found it hard to hide the jealousy that coursed through him. John and Allie, your son has a gift, Frank began as they all sat on the porch sipping ice-cold lemonade from different colored glasses. None of them matched. I know it, and the Dodgers know it. We don't want Gene to be taken by one of the other teams, but he's too young to take into our farm system. What we'd like to do is have you, John, sign for Gene, and we will place him with the St. Louis Granary team. The Grain Elevator has a team that plays in the Industrial League. We'll pay the granary to have Gene play in the team, and they'll pay Gene as though he works at the granary. His only job will be to play baseball. That's it. He will play there the balance of this season and all of next season. If he plays well there, in 1942 we'll move him up to our minor league system. I think by mid-season 43, maybe 44 at the latest, he could be playing in Brooklyn, catching in the big show. John had grown to like Frank Boudreau, but he was naturally skeptical. And how much would he earn, he asked. Gene can earn almost $1 an hour with his production bonus with the granary team, but that's just a fraction of what he can earn if he performs well and moves up. He just has to play there the way he played a couple weeks ago. And what if he don't? Asked John. Frank paused a moment before answering. Well, John, then you can have your farm helper back. It's important that you all understand this is business. Big business. Those who play and help the team win will move up. Those who don't, move out. It's as simple as that. For the first time, Allie joined into the conversation. Gene, do you want to move to St. Louis and play baseball? Gene, who had been hanging on every syllable, was bursting with excitement. It's all I want to do, Mom. A long stretch of silence followed. Jean looked back and forth at each of the adults. John stared directly at his son. Allie stared at John. Frank just sat back and smiled at all three. "Frank?" John finally answered, putting down his lemonade glass and standing up tall and proud. "You take good care of my boy." 7 words. A young man's future hangs in the balance. John stepped off the porch and headed for the barn. Gene Moore left the next day for St. Louis in the beginning of his baseball career. Although the season was nearly over, he was able to play in 22 games. He made quite an impression on the league, hitting 6 home runs and making plays behind the plate that amazed even the old-timers who were sure they'd seen it all. In 22 games, 27 men tried to steal on Gene. Only 6 succeeded. Gene just wouldn't allow it. Chapter 6. A Day of Infamy. December 7, 1941, dawned blue, clear, crisp in southern Illinois. Although it was unusually warm for the Sesser December, Gene could still see traces of his breath lingering in the air. Home from his first season with the granary team in St. Louis, he felt invigorated by the cool temperature and the beautiful sky. With Gene's help and outstanding catching abilities, the granary team won the league championship and Gene was named Rookie of the Year, even though he'd only played in 22 games. The granary and the league were delighted with Gene's performance. Frank and the Dodgers were ecstatic. Gene returned home from St. Louis to help Pop in the farm. He received quite a welcome from the town. Mayor Noble Vaughn stopped by Gene's house to present him with a certificate for a free breakfast at Lena Van Horn's Cafe and a letter from the town council recognizing Gene for his accomplishments. Dr. Ward stopped by the house and encouraged Gene to take his dream and abilities as far as they would carry him, saying, "I just would like to know that I delivered a major leaguer before I retire." He looked down at John and continued, "Not every doctor can say that, you know." Sesser had never had a hero, and Gene Moore was the closest they had ever come to putting one of their own on a pedestal. It gave the townsfolk a sense of pride beyond anything they had ever experienced. The people of Sesser had taken notice of Gene long before the Dodgers caught up with him. It started when he was only 8. The old men downtown would stop him on the street and talk baseball because Gene knew every player on the Cardinals roster and could recite their entire stats without fail. Frankie Frisch was the manager, and the second baseman of the team everyone called the Gas House Gang. He hit .305. Gene knew the other batting averages, too. Rip Collins, the first baseman, hit .333 with 35 home runs. Pepper Martin played third and hit .289. Joe Medwick played left field and hit .318. Dizzy Dean won 30 games and his brother Paul won 19. Gene was only a kid, but when talking baseball, he could keep up with any adult. Gene was up early shoveling coal from Pop's wagon into the barn and thinking back to the time when he was a little kid impressing the graybeards with his knowledge. Maybe someday another little kid, yet unborn, would impress others by reciting Gene Moore's statistics. The thought brought a smile to his face. Gene was leaning into another shovelful of coal when Billy Grammer stopped by. Billy was his best friend and had been from a very early age. Billy didn't play baseball and knew nothing and cared less about the game. What he loved was the guitar, and he was the best picker in Sesser. People said Billy was as good a musician as Gene was a ball player. Billy would sit hour after hour on the old porch of the Grammer home playing his guitar. The fact that Billy couldn't read music didn't slow him down. He listened to the country and western station out of St. Louis, KMOX AM, during the week and especially enjoyed listening to the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday nights out of WSM out of Nashville. Billy would listen, hear the music in his head, and then play it on his guitar from memory, usually without making a single mistake. Billy could play anything you heard on the radio. Gene loved country and western music and would sit and listen to Billy play for hours. "Gene, what are you doing later today?" Billy asked. "They're showing a movie at the old opera house and I thought you might want to go." "What's showing?" "I don't know, but it'll be more fun than shoveling coal," Billy replied. "No kidding," Gene responded. "Sure. What time?" "I think they open the doors at 1 o'clock. "Okay, let me finish up here and I'll meet you there," answered Gene. The morning passed quickly. Gene finished up his chores and washed up at the pump outside the barn before hurrying to meet Billy in front of the opera house. "Hey, Gene, look," said Billy, pointing down the street as they were about to enter the theater. "It's Ward's girlfriend, Jamie Reed." "Yeah, I see her. Too bad Ward's not here." Jamie was a beautiful 18-year-old woman with a glowing smile and long, silky blonde hair. Her sparkling sapphire blue eyes had captivated Ward at first glance. In fact, she attracted the attention of all the young men in town, but she only had eyes for Ward. Jamie noticed them and walked over to say hello. Hey, Gene. Hey, Billy. Jamie looked around. Where's your big brother, Gene? Is he coming to the movie today? No, Gene laughed. But if he knew you were here, he'd be here. You going in, Jamie? Sure, I'll join you, she answered, slipping her arm into Gene's. Maybe it will make Ward jealous, she joked. All three laughed at the thought. When the movie Citizen Kane ended about 3:30 p.m., Billy and Gene stood up to leave. He named his sled Rosebud? Billy laughed. I don't get it. I don't get it either, Billy, admitted Gene. Don't you have a name for your guitar, Billy? Jamie asked. No, but if I did, I wouldn't name it after some silly flower,